Philadelphia, I always talk about Philadelphia. If it's in my records, if it's in my monologues, it's important to me because that's the connection. Philadelphia.
We're walking through Richard Allen Holmes, a housing project in North Philadelphia. We're looking for the house Bill Cosby grew up in.
So there's 920, 922.
Would it be across the street? A wrought iron?
They don't look like what you'd imagine. They look like suburban townhouses.
Across the street is the newer housing.
I'm imagining that the when he was here, the homes looked like this.
Yeah.
We lived in the projects. Two-bedroom apartment in the projects with beautiful linoleum floors.
The house is gone, but this is the place where Cosby spent most of his childhood. We talked to the people here. Over the years, Richard Allen has gone through its ups and downs, but we heard a lot about pride, planting flowers and neighborhood kids playing in the street. We also heard stories about gunshots and sirens. The people we spoke to had mixed feelings about the charges, but everyone here claimed Cosby as one of their own.
I'm very proud of Bill Cosby. Growing up with Fat Albert, watching them cartoons and stuff, that was a part of my makeup.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Cosby Unraveled. I'm Annette John Hall.
We are here to announce today charges that have just been filed against William Henry Cosby.
On June 5th, Bill Cosby faces felony charges for 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault. He's accused of drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constant in 2004. She worked for the basketball team at Temple University and considered Cosby a mentor. More than 60 women say Cosby raped or sexually assaulted them, but Constant is the only accuser whose claims have led to criminal charges. The allegations outline a disturbing pattern of behavior that, if true, go back more than 50 years. Cosby's 79 years old, and if he's convicted, he could spend the next decade in prison.
Whatever the actual verdict is, his career is dead in the water. So he's already been punished in that way.
Disappointed or disbelieving, there are no shortages of opinions from the folks who live where Cosby grew up.
I am Lynn.
I'm Mary.
Lynn.
Nice to meet you.
You too. Okay, so you remember him from his comedy?
Mary Jefferson is 72 and Lynn Hercules is 56. They both have lived in the Richard Allen Holmes for a long time. And pretty much like everybody else in the 80s, they were fans of The Cosby Show.
I loved the show.
Why?
He was more like a father to the children.
Yeah.
A down-to-earth father, yeah.
When you heard the accusations of all these women...
When I heard that, I called him a dirty bastard. I didn't know all the facts or anything.
Yeah.
But,
what you think now, though?
It's two sides to every story.
Yeah.
But if it was my daughter and she came to me, I'm going to have to believe her.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to believe her.
While Bill Cosby has come a long way from the Richard Allen Holmes, you can see its influence is all over his work. Those unforgettable cartoon characters weren't just made up by Cosby. They were based on his real friends. Mushmouth, Old Weird Harold. Imagine young Cosby and his friend Albert Robertson, the model for Fat Albert, walking down the street cracking each other up. Cosby always knew he could make people laugh. He considered a career in comedy, but this was the 1950s, and those times weren't very kind to black folks.
People would say, you know, you're funny, you ought to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. And my answer to them was, right, just walk right up. I think a part of what kept me from really taking it seriously was because, You're looking at the 50s and the 60s, and you're looking at no Negroes wanted here.
That was Cosby on WHYY's Fresh Air in 1991. Cosby wasn't much of a student. He flunked out of Central High School, which was one of the city's best public high schools. But after a stint in the Navy, he went to Temple University on a football, track, and basketball scholarship.
I think the commitment came when I had all of my academic world set, my athletic world set, and then this show business world. I could toy around with that and not be super, super serious about entering the area.
But for a man born to entertain, his passion for comedy couldn't stay on the back burner.
So while at college, to supplement my mother's and father's checks, I took a job as a bartender. And that's where, mixing drinks, I would tell the customers, we would trade jokes, really, and I'd get tips from that.
That's where he met saxophonist Jimmy Heath, a fellow Philadelphian who would become one of Cosby's close friends. He's a jazz legend. As a solo artist and playing with his siblings, the Heath brothers, at 90, he's still performing throughout the world.
He was attending bar while I was performing and telling jokes across the bar. And he wasn't the big star that he became.
Heath's star was rising. Cosby's star hadn't even begun to shine yet.
I had the gig, and he would always mention that in later years, that, oh, I got the gig now, when he got on TV and got famous, you know. And we used to laugh about that.
No matter how big they got, they were Philly through and through.
We had nicknames for each other. I used to call him North Philly Billy. He called me South Philly Shorty.
Cosby booked Heath and his brothers as the opening act to his comedy gigs and featured them on The Cosby Show in the 80s. When Jimmy Heath received the NEA Jazz Masters Award in 2003, Cosby had custom suits made for him.
So he says, well, give this guy your size and everything, and he had me three outfits, three suits, and I had never had any special tailor-made outfits like Mr. Cosby bought me at that time. So that's something I always remember, because I had never had no $2,000 suits.
Cosby loved jazz, and he supported jazz musicians throughout his career. He would MC gigs, show up to fundraisers, and when he got a chance, he'd play. Cosby improvised his drumming skills on the Dick Cavett Show in 1973.
So he counted off, he said, one, two, one, two, three, and I went, and I was doing like this, and I was keeping good time, you know, but I was in a panic, and the whole thing is starting to tighten up here. Meanwhile, the left hand is frozen.
You know, I don't think anybody would take him on the road.
Dorthon Kirk, the widow of jazz giant Rahsaan Roland Kirk, remembers when she first met Cosby at the Village Vanguard in New York City.
Rahsaan would let people sit in with him back in those days. And this particular night, it was Bill Cosby. And I don't know if you know or not, but he at one point was an aspiring drummer. So he's not professional. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got five.
Take five? Can we take five?
Hey, this my band. They leave when I'm ready to leave.
We ran into Philadelphia native and jazz bassist Christian McBride in the hallway of public radio WBGO in Newark. McBride is a jazz virtuoso. He's won 5 Grammys, so he's a pretty big deal.
What can I tell you about Dr. C?
We didn't have an appointment. But when he heard we were doing a story about Cosby, he made time to talk to us.
Growing up in Philadelphia, particularly in the mid, late 70s and through the 80s, he was as important to young Philadelphians as, say, like Babe Ruth was to baseball. We had almost every Bill Cosby record he made. We had Why Is There Air, to my brother Russell, who I slept with. Bill Cosby is a very funny fellow. 200 miles per hour inside the mind of Bill Cosby. My Father Confused Me, What Must I Do? I think I know every word on all of those albums like the back of my hand.
He got to know his childhood hero, and through jazz, they became friends. McBride told us his favorite story about the time they were backstage in a dressing room at a sold-out concert at the Kennedy Center in D.C. Cosby had some Cuban cigars and wanted to light up, and he wasn't about to let some stupid fire code stop him.
Two Cuban cigars fired up backstage at the Kennedy Center. I'm thinking every fire alarm in this place is going to go off. They're going to shut the show down. We're all going to get arrested. And so I'm scared. I'm like, I don't think now is a good time. And he's like, let's smoke it. Hush. It's like, all right. He lights me up. He lights his up. And we're sitting back in the dressing room chilling. Got our feet up about 20 seconds, you know, maybe a minute. Mr. Cosby runs to the door. He said, yeah. Oh, my God. You can't smoke here. The smoke is billowing all into the audience. You guys gotta put that out. Bill Cosby says, why? These are Cuban.
He was a hometown boy who grew up here and made good.
Wilson Good became the first black mayor of Philadelphia in the mid-80s. At the same time, The Cosby Show was a perennial number one in the ratings. During Good's campaign, Cosby hosted a fundraiser for him.
He was always a big cheerleader of me, a big cheerleader for the city, and a big supporter of the city throughout.
He used his influence to get money for the city's sports and recreation programs. For many years, he was a mainstay at the Penn Relays, the oldest track and field event in the country. That's where he ran against Wilson Good in a senior division race.
I was running the anchor leg and took the baton. Bill Cosby grabbed me and said, wait, why don't you wait for me to get my baton? And then why don't we just jog down and I will let you tip in front of me and still win. And so I fell for it, and he got the baton and took off. He tricked me.
Cosby wore Philadelphia on his chest. He'd wear T-shirts from Temple University, from Lincoln, from Cheney. On his show, he was always eating hoagies, Cliff Huxtable's favorite sandwich.
First, we have healthy rice cakes. We don't want any, okay? Now we have something else Mrs. Huxtable would like us to eat to live longer and drink. Apple juice. Throw that out, too, okay? Now here we have a giant hoagie. It's full of preservatives and additives, and you may not live as long. Let's try it. Okay.
Good and Cosby are the same age. He understands the obstacles the comedian faced and the importance of his achievements.
I grew up in the segregated South, where African Americans were denied basic and fundamental rights. And to see Bill Cosby rise to fame in the 1960s and in the 1970s just made me absolutely proud. The likelihood of seeing a black man on television was as remote as seeing a black man in the White House.
All these people have stories and great affection for Dr. C, nor Philly Billy, Cos. But the charges against Cosby are serious. Do his friends in Philly still have his back?
He was a good guy, and is a good guy in my book forever.
Jimmy Heath, his friend of 57 years, stands with him.
My reaction is then and now. I don't believe it. I do not believe it. Everybody wanted to get cars for money.
What does Wilson Good, now a Baptist minister, think?
My reaction was another hero have been pushed
down or brought down. And we so often remember the bad and not the good.
And how does Christian McBride reconcile these allegations against Bill Cosby?
It's deeply disappointing. I am personally as stumped as everyone else. I think it's something that all of us are struggling with. But you just can't wash away the inspiration and the happiness and the laughs. You can't erase all that. You know, it's part of our DNA.
Next time on Cosby Unraveled.
I certainly was not going to be a black joke.
Pull your pants up, black people. I was on TV in the 80s. I can talk down to you because I had a successful sitcom.
People getting shot in the back of the head over a piece of pound cake. And then we all run out and we're outraged. Oh, the cops shouldn't have shot him. What the hell was he doing with the pound cake in his hand?
So Bill Cosby was on a warpath against poor black people in America, especially black women.
It just got really complicated for the black community.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Special thanks to Michael Smirkanish for the clips at the beginning of the show and to musicians Tony Trove and Mike Beavis. Engineering help from Charlie Kyer and Bob Alls. The show was produced by Lindsay Lazarski and Jeanette Woods. I'm Annette John Hall.